This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and your home smart speaker. Brian Haynes, Yo Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We've got a lot cooking this afternoon in the sports world, man. A couple of hockey games, some NBA games. We got the PGA Championship, and I just saw Bryson DeChambeau just drove the green on one.
What?
Yeah, he just teed off on one, and he I believe he drove the green. That's what I'm
saying. How far is that?
Guarantee it's 400.
393 yards, I believe.
Wow.
393.
That is.
What's the farthest, like, if you really got one, what could you, you know, on your best day? Could you get 350?
My tee ball, if I hit a good one, it goes 290, and it might roll out 305. Downwind, it could go 330. That's it, Max.
Hayes?
Oh, yeah.
Hayes hits at 275.
Yeah, probably about 275, 280. Like, same thing. Downhill, wind behind me, I could get it up to 280, 285, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. This guy's driving it over 100 yards more than I am.
No, is he a great grinder? Like, he's got some weight behind him, but he's not like a...
No, he just put on a bunch of weight. He's a scientist, man. He got in the weight room and said, how do I get more powerful? And he went in and studied flexes and lengths of drivers and club faces, and he put it all together, and he is hitting the golf ball 385 yards in the air.
Gross. It really is gross. So we will be tracking that all afternoon. The Golf Report is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Find all new ways to enjoy up to 8 seats in the Subaru Ascent, the largest Subaru ever. Hurry now for rates from 0.5% at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. A few hours away from puck drop, the Leafs are facing a back-to-back here in the playoffs. And I don't believe they've done that since 2013, the lockout year, where they won Game 6 at home on a Sunday night. And then we all know what happened the next night. They were up 4-1 with 11 minutes to go, if you want me to refresh your memory.
Yeah.
That was the lockout year against Boston. And they are facing a back-to-back. And with them splitting the series, it's 1-1. We know it's going at least 4. But you're going to have two games over about 27 hours, and they are the most important games in the month of August that this team has ever played.
Yeah, and like you see, I mean, the Carolina has a platoon system, so they went to Reimer. Like, Anderson's playing both. It would be interesting to see, depending on what happens tonight, if Columbus came, you know, went with Elvis tomorrow. I don't think that's a guarantee. Again, a lot of it is depending on how the game turns out.
They do have that luxury.
They do have
Toronto,
an option. You're right.
Toronto maybe does, but not really.
Well, no. Like, I always say this, and I say this respectful because I like Jack Campbell. I played in that position. Would you rather have 85% of Frederick Anderson or 100% of Jack Campbell? I used to, you know... Would you rather have 85% of Mika Kiprusoff or Carey Price or all these instead of 100% of their backup? Like, to me, you're still getting a better opportunity with the more talented person in the net on the back-to-back. But that's just me, and especially in this shortened situation. We're not talking about a Tuesday in November in the regular season where you're looking at saving the goaltender for the full season. This is your season. This is your year here. So, Freddie's got to go both games no matter what.
Yeah, he's got to play both games.
Yeah.
Even if the Leafs win tonight, you still go with Freddie tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a great time to dummy somebody, like to carry the momentum. If you put an ass beating on somebody and then you can just look at somebody on the ice and say it's coming again tomorrow night, as opposed to, I mean, whoever wins the game is going to be having the momentum, but it might be just a coin toss the next day. But if someone gets a beat down tonight, they're afraid going into the next night saying we're getting it again and it could be over.
I think it's important that the Leafs try to break Korpisalo.
Oh, yeah.
I've been so impressed with his play. Like, there was,
unreal.
Yeah, he has been so good. And he's been so dialed in. Really, the Leafs had a shot to win game one. It was a coin flip game. It's not like the Leafs were dominant and Korpisalo just stood on his head. He played great, but so did Freddie, and Columbus played equally as well as the Leafs. But game two could have been 5 or 6-0 easily. Easily.
Yeah. Everyone was, I don't know about you two, weren't you scared to death that they were going to just come down and float one from inside the blue line to go in somehow?
That was a classic example of
that. Yeah, that was coming, I thought.
I said that yesterday, and I talked to you guys about it, but I was more impressed with the timing of Freddie's saves because he didn't have to make a ton of them. But, you know, to your point, O, doesn't see a shot for the first 7 minutes, and your first one is a broken play, two-on-one, partial break. He's got to make a block or save. Like, if you get scored on right there, now the bench sags, the confidence of the group sags. Like, you're up 1-0, and you're just burying Corpusalo at the other end with shots and chances. And Freddie made two back-to-back saves near the end of the second period after Austin had scored. Like, that could have tied it up and given Columbus some momentum heading into the third. Like,
oh, absolutely.
To me, it was the timely saves. I loved Freddie's game last game.
Yeah, he played great. I mean, what was more imperative was they actually scored. I mean, that's what really was needed. And they once they broke loose, then they started running away with that game. But they're back in action tonight. Again, puck drop at 8 o'clock. And joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our hockey insider, Bob McKenzie. Is it a lock for you? I mean, it seems to go without saying that Freddie plays tonight and tomorrow. But what about on the Columbus side? Could you see them going with Merzlikins tomorrow night based on the stats and the history of back-to-backs?
I think it would mostly depend on what happens tonight. If Corpusalo plays great tonight, then I think Torts is probably the last guy in the world to be overly concerned about back-to-back. He might be one of the first coaches that would take the science of back-to-back numbers and throw them out the window and say, forget about that. He's doing great. Keep going. Now, if he loses tonight and maybe, you know, looks a little leaky or whatever, I don't think he'd hesitate to go with Merzlikins, who had such a good year. So, I think both options are on the table, but it all really hinges on how the game goes tonight.
Bobby, I think you said in the preview show that this is kind of business as usual, except for two series that would cause some interest if there was an upset, Chicago and Montreal Pitt, and we're looking like that come to fruition here.
Holy moly. I mean, it really is. And, you know, the 12 versus 5, two teams, Chicago and Montreal, that there's not a chance in the world either one of these teams was making the playoffs, and now here they are, one win away from advancing to the round of 16 and what we would traditionally call the real Stanley Cup playoffs. Some of it's self-inflicted, both Pittsburgh and Edmonton not playing as well as they can. But you got to hand it to the Blackhawks and the Canadiens. They've done a really good job. And Price has been really, really good, but Montreal still has played a hard game and done what they needed to do. Their kids have stepped out, Suzuki and Kotkaniemi, and they're getting a lot from veteran guys like Gallagher and Byron, and the defense is looking really good. You know, the Ben Chiarot free agent signing, I think he was free agent, wasn't a trade, was he?
No, he was a free agent,
yeah. He's been very, very good, and Petrie and Weber have really been on top of their game. So, you know, they're full value for where they're at right now, even if early in the series you could say that, you know, Pittsburgh looked like the much better team. That certainly wasn't the case in the last game. And if you blow a 3-1 lead, then you're playing with fire, and the Oilers can identify with that as well.
You know, I wanted to hear where you guys are at. I'll weigh in quickly. Like, Jeff Petrie's game-winning goal can't go in from there.
No
like
way.
It's a great shot, but it's a bad goal, and it's
I never understand why the goalie just doesn't stand there, Kirky McLean style.
I know. And listen, I'll be the first to tell you, like, they play the percentages and all that, but I'm telling you right now.
These shooters are onto it.
Well, you're right, and that's why he shot right at his ear, and it was a perfect shot. Like, it was an amazing shot by Jeff Petrie. But you can't give up that goal.
You can't.
Like that at that time. Like, Petrie's a fantastic player. I think he under the radar, gets overshadowed because of Weber. But he's a really, really good player.
He is, but I will say, I think Shea Weber has been spectacular. Like,
yeah,
Weber looks like he is dialed in. He's healthy
he's
for the first
angry.
Time in 2 years.
He's angry,
and he's angry.
Too.
And he's one of those guys, like, it's basically him and Chara that are in a company where they don't care who you are. They know they have so much respect, they can pop Sid in the head and not be, you know, apologize for it, or Malkin.
Yeah.
They can just play mean. That's their game, right?
Yeah, he is the man mountain. So, and He's got the beard to go with it now. And he's done an extraordinary job with advancing age and really some really serious injury issues. You know, that broken foot or foot problem that he had, that was a real, almost career-threatening in a manner of speaking. And he's bounced back really well, and he's not letting age or injury minimize what he's able to contribute at all. And you get the feeling now when you get to down, you know, still a long way to go. And as the cliche says, that the new cliche, that third win's the hardest to get.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you got to treat it like a game five, game four, like, yeah, a game five.
Yeah, exactly. But I was going to say, you know, guys like Price and Weber, as dialed in as they've been, you could almost sense they're going to try and take it to another level here, because they can close the Penguins out tomorrow.
To steal a line from the Joker, if you're going to play the agent of chaos, or if you are going to be an agent of chaos, Bob, when you consider some of the possibilities, the blurriness is starting to fade about those eight teams that could be up for that first pick overall. Which outcome would lead to the most chaos from fans, from media? Which team winning the first overall pick would lead to the craziest reaction?
Well, I already, before the preliminary round began, I said if Edmonton loses, if Pittsburgh loses, and Toronto loses, and then you have the lottery, and each of those teams would have a 12.5% chance, along with the other five teams that are out. We know the Rangers are already in that mix. They're the only ones so far that have been eliminated. The way you would want the lottery to go, as they flip the cards over, is for those three teams, Pittsburgh, Edmonton, and Toronto, to be the last three teams standing in the lottery. So you just know that Alexis Lafreniere is going to be playing either with Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, or John Tavares / Austin Matthews.
Buffalo would love that.
That's what you want for the to be an agent of chaos, is those three teams and Bill Daly flipping those cards, and like nobody in the league's happy about it.
That would
except
be
for those three teams.
Crazy.
That would be outstanding.
Yeah, it would be just such great content.
But you know what? I will say one thing, though, about, you know, and everybody say it. It's, you know, if Pittsburgh loses, if Edmonton were to lose, and people say it's just ridiculous that they have an opportunity for the first overall pick. Well, you know what's just as ridiculous? And I understand why it happened. And one level of ridiculousness explains the other level of ridiculousness. And that is, you know what's ridiculous? Is having played 70, 71 games and being home and cooled out for a playoff spot like the Penguins and the Oilers were, and then finding out that you've got to go in and play a best of five on a neutral site game against two teams that sold at the deadline and had virtually no chance of making the playoffs. That's ridiculous. So in order to say to Pittsburgh and Edmonton, we're going to make you put your 70 games of proficiency on the line against another team's, Montreal's and Chicago's, 70 games of lack of proficiency over the regular season, there's got to be a reward if you end up getting aced out in that preliminary round. And the reward is a 12.5% chance of winning the draft lottery. Now, it would be different, too, though, if the first draft lottery hadn't produced one of those eight teams having the number one overall pick. This is serendipity. This is the agent of chaos at the highest level. We knew when that draft lottery occurred, it could have been that any one of those eight teams, the highest they were picking was fourth or fifth. And it wouldn't be nearly as big a deal. But because we had phase one of the lottery and a nameless, faceless team got the first pick, that's a spicy meatball, as Jamie would say.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not prepared to write off Pittsburgh or Edmonton, for that matter. I mean,
not yet.
But, Noodles, you said earlier you're more concerned about Edmonton than you are Pittsburgh.
Well, just the way they're playing, and I will say this. Corey Crawford, if you just went by the numbers, and I always, you know, the numbers are 1/8 of the whole pie. Corey Crawford's save percentage in the three games is like .860, .870, and like .880. Like, it's not like he's been, like, lighting it on fire. So these games have been kind of just all over the map. So it's not, you know, I think Edmonton does have a chance, realistically, if they play their game. But Chicago, we were talking about this earlier, Bobby. Like, it's almost like Taves and, like, and Kane, to me, wasn't a factor last night. I didn't think he played very well. But Taves and Duncan Keith have been unreal. Like, Duncan Keith looks like he's 25 years old right now, the way he's skating.
Yeah, they've turned the clock back, no doubt. And now Edmonton's playing with fire because now you're in elimination. And when you go into an elimination in a series against guys like that you just mentioned, Taves and Keith, and for that matter, Patrick Kane, now you are, and maybe Corey Crawford as well.
Exactly.
You're playing with fire. And I don't think the Oilers' goaltending has been anything at all to write home about. And now they're faced with a conundrum as to whether it's Koskinen or Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then you look at the other Canadian teams where last time I checked, Vancouver was up 2-0 in their game.
Yeah, 2 minutes left. They'll be fine in that game. They're on the power play, too.
There you go. They're going up 2-1 in that series, so they'll be able to breathe a sigh of relief in Vancouver. It won't be extensive because that market is what it is. It's a lot like Toronto.
Yeah.
And then the nightcap tonight, in a weird way, I almost feel like it's almost mercy. Like, can you just put Winnipeg out of their misery here with all these injuries and – I was high on them coming in. I thought they were going to win the series, but I can't say I have much faith now based on the injuries and the way this series played out.
No, they're going to need Hellebuck to pitch a shutout here tonight. And, you know, with the injuries going the way that they've gone, no doubt about that. But, no, it's going to be fascinating to see that game. I'm really looking forward to see what we get with the Leafs tonight. So, the Muzzin thing's a huge loss. Let's not kid anybody here. He's a unicorn on that Leafs team. There's nobody like him.
Yep.
Certainly not on the blue line. And that's a significant loss. Now, the good news is that it's something they've dealt with before. So like the half a dozen games before the pause, you had Riley out, you had Muzzin out, and Travis Dermott and Hall played together. And because Riley was out, it didn't even give them any other choice but to use Dermott and Hall as the shutdown pair. And they played some tough minutes against some good players and good teams, and they fared pretty well. So that's encouraging. You know, I know Leaf fans kind of groan when they know that Marty Marinson's going in on the third pair with Tyson Barrie. But, you know, you have to deal with the cards that you're dealt, and there's obviously no Jake Muzzin, so it's Dermott and Hall, and it'll be Riley and Cece, and then it'll be Marinson and Barrie. I know there's been some talk about dressing seven defensemen. I don't expect that to be the case at all. I think Sheldon Keefe and the Leafs like what Spezza, Engvall, and Clifford delivered last game, and they like the luxury of having four lines that you can roll. And Clifford was the low man on the totem pole of ice, and he was like 736 last game. Spezza was up over 8 minutes, I believe, and Engvall was almost at 10 minutes. And Engvall's a penalty killer, and Spets is a second power play guy. So I don't think they want to lose the flexibility in their lineup with taking a 12th forward out for the sake of a seventh defenseman, especially the defenseman you'd be putting in is Rasmus Sandin. Well, I mean, Morgan Riley and Tyson Barrie are manning your power play. You don't really need what Sandin brings to the party. Unless you think one of those other guys isn't healthy or whatever, but I think they are. So I think you'll probably see six defensemen tonight.
Yeah, and I think that's the move, and the focus will be on Marinson because of his history here and because he is quite literally replacing Muzzin. But for me, it should be on the other guys who just have to elevate their game. And I look at a guy like Morgan Riley, who I thought was much better in game two. But I think he's still got another level he can get to. And maybe he's still finding his way, maybe getting in shape. He's had a weird year with injuries. And obviously when you consider COVID throwing everyone a bit of a curveball, it would apply to him like everyone else. But I wouldn't be shocked if his minutes tick up another couple minutes tonight.
Yeah.
And I think they should, and I think they have to. You know, he's their number one guy. With or without Muzzin, you still need a ton out of Morgan Riley.
Yeah, and I thought Dermott played really well in game two. Actually, both games, but I thought he was really good. I think he's had a high level of energy. I thought he's been moving the puck smartly. I think he's been competing hard. And he's not Jake Muzzin. There isn't any, as I said, Muzzin's a unicorn on the Leafs. There isn't another one like him. But You know, it's for me, the replacement for Muzzin is actually Dermott, and then Marincin's the replacement for Dermott. So I think in terms of responsibility and minutes, quantity and quality of minutes, Dermott's the key to weathering the storm. But as you said, you could also really lean a lot heavier on Riley if you need to.
Yeah, well, we'll find out in a few hours. Vancouver wrapped up their game 3-0, so they're up 2-1 in their series. They're on the verge of potentially moving through. At least one Canadian team in the Calgary-Winnipeg series will go through, and Montreal maybe. I'm not sure how many people saw that coming, so we'll see. There's likely going to be some Canadian content as this tournament continues. Enjoy the weekend. Great stuff as always. Thank you, Bob.
Awesome, boys. Have a good one.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom is open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland or buy online at mapletoyota.com. So Leafs Blue Jackets tonight. We will continue to tee that up with Ray. Ray Ferraro coming up just after 6 o'clock. We'll get Ray's take on the Vancouver game that just wrapped up. Vancouver up 2-1 in that series. And that's a shutout for Markstrom. That was needed.
Yeah,
sure.
He played. Yeah, he was better last game, like we were talking about with Ray yesterday, and he's starting to feel in a little bit. And he really has been their MVP all year long, even though they've got star power. Like, they need him to be at the top of his game,
dialed in.
Yeah,
yeah, big time,
big goalie. Yeah, big goalie.
So that's a win, and then we've got a couple of games tonight. Again, one featuring the Leafs, the other one featuring Winnipeg and Calgary. We'll tee that up with Ray. Just over an hour. We're going to look to the NBA bubble or head down to the NBA bubble in about 10 minutes. And we're teeing up the Jays game tonight and tracking the PGA Championship as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
And the awkward text chain coming up.
Yes, we
next.
Will reveal the whole shooting match from about 10 to 6 a.m. this morning onward. All right, so the Leafs are in action tonight. The Jays are back in action, coming off a win last night. Nate Pearson on the mound. PGA Championship currently ongoing out in San Fran. And Tiger Woods played pretty well. Like, he was rolling putts, too. He changed up his putter, and that's maybe not so significant for some people. It is for him. He's been using the same putter his whole career, and he ended up 2-under. So he shot 2-under on the day. He is right there. Jason Day is in the lead at 5-under. But
I thought about him. About him.
He's been good since the resumption of play. He's been in it. So there's some big names up there, which is what you would expect. It's a major tournament. It may not feel exactly like it should or like it would in normal circumstances, but I do wonder at what point do we get past that. And I'm guilty of it as a guy who's on the air all the time, and I'm constantly wondering, you know, why is it so different? How different is it? What is your viewing experience like? You know, at what point do we settle in and we stop kind of noticing or, you know, pointing to how different this is? I mean, this
golf's
is our
the
reality.
One sport. I've told you guys numerous times. I look, I'm like, that's Koepka. That's Rory. That's Tiger. I don't care if it's some stiff with a camera that's the only guy in the background. It must be different for them because everyone's talking about the energy Tiger Woods creates. Obviously, the whole golf course is following him, and they go nuts when he makes a putt. But as a viewer, I just want to see Ryu on the mound, Pearson on the mound, Woods hitting a shot, McIlroy. I don't care, man. Matthews on the ice, McDavid. They're just there. I don't even see the crowd or care about it. I don't care.
Your viewing pleasure, like Hayes, you're an emotional guy, I'm sure, when the Leafs play. Like, has it changed? Like, I'm just watching the games. I couldn't care less. Like,
yeah,
I know the ambiance.
It's
like,
different.
If it's a big hit, you can hear the crowd or whatever, or a big save. But, like, for the most part, it's looked like just good playoff hockey to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually the game itself. I think it was the lack of buildup has been noticeable for me. You know, we have gone from nothing for 4 months to 100 miles an hour right out of the game.
Right.
You know, like, must win tonight. It's like, wait a minute, how is it a must win? They haven't played in 4 months. Like, it's just
right.
it's like this strange experience where I understand what is at stake, but I don't necessarily feel like that's at stake. That said, it's been early in the series. I'll see what the emotions are going to be like and what the experience will be like when it's an elimination game.
Right.
Whether it's the Leafs could be eliminated or they could eliminate Columbus.
You don't have playoff fever yet.
No,
like,
exactly.
That's what it is.
Like, yeah, I'm enjoying the games, and when I'm watching them, I'm like, this is good hockey. Like, these are fun games.
Right.
There's ups and downs, and if there's a great play, you know, you get the juices running and the blood flowing. But
right.
It's not the same, hey, it's a game day, and there's buzz, and wow, I can't wait for the game, and I'm, you know, I don't have that yet. I might get that. Like, I kind of expect that I likely will, especially if the Leafs go on a run, the Raptors go on a run. But it's so much so soon.
It's like you've been
on an deserted island for 4 months, and then they drop you into Midtown Manhattan. And it's like, now this is your new reality. And it's almost like a shock.
Well, it's got
it's a shock
for me,
to the system.
For me, it's got, I don't know, a cross between the Olympics and maybe the World Championship feel. Where you're trying to track all the games. And, okay, this one starts at 4, this one starts at 2:30, that one's at noon. Okay, what do I care about this series? Okay, you know, the Islanders and Florida, do I care about that much? Well, technically I do, because, you know, that's a good play. Like, to me, you're almost weighing things out, and I'm not 100% there as far as I don't think the teams are as sharp. I think, you know, the refs are making calls. It still feels like not preseason, but early in the regular season,
right,
where the play is still sloppy, missed assignments, and even the refs are still getting into it. You know, I always feel like there's more in early in the season. There's more calls because the play is sloppier.
Yes.
And then the playoffs, I feel like, you know, the refs kind of manage the game. They manage how it feels out there. Everything's
just being
called.
Which they should be doing anyway. The refs,
right.
But I guess you have to give them the courteous allowance of finding their game or finding their rhythm as well. But if you were to pose this question to me, does it feel more like preseason or a cup final? I would say preseason, without question. Like, in terms of my reaction, my anticipation, my viewing experience, but I think that will change. I fully expect it to change. In fact, I feel like I'm almost in a better spot right now than I was a week and a half ago, teeing it up. Now that we're into it and the games, like, I'm looking forward to the game tonight. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
I am looking forward to the game, and when the game goes on, I'm going to be locked in, and I'm looking forward to it. It's the buildup. You know, this is an example of it. Like, we would be in studio talking with Joe from the Bridge, and then Gino would come down and chirp one of us, and then we'd be flying home and listening to the game on the radio, and it's just not the same because life isn't the same.
Yeah, you're right.
And even an 8 o'clock start is different. Like, usually they'd be playing at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I also feel too. I don't know if this is an advantage or not, but I think the Leafs watching other teams go up or down, it almost could, like, for them starting day two instead of day one, that opening night you could sit back and see how hockey was going to unfold. And then on day two, you could go, okay, this is how it's going to happen. Like, I think, you know, the Leafs probably in the bubble watching Edmonton, watching Pittsburgh last night, going, hey, we don't want to be in that situation. Like, you could almost use it to motivate yourself.
Well, hopefully, yes. But anyway, let's continue that later in the afternoon. Someone's mic is going completely haywire. I don't know. Is that you, O? Did you turn the volume up on the PGA Championship or something?
Yeah.
Kenny, figure it out. Something's going on.
I didn't do a thing,
okay,
so it's
well,
not
some,
me.
Something has changed in terms of what we're sounding like, but we have a guest on the line who you think we're out of sorts. She's in the bubble, and I believe she's been in the bubble for a while. Like, bubble life, trying to get a read on what's going on outside of the bubble. I can't imagine how confusing that would be. From the LA Times, she's down in Orlando. Here is Tanya Ganguly joining us. Are you up to date on the rest of the world, or are you just focused on the bubble at this point?
I feel pretty disconnected from the rest of the world. I've been trying to pay attention, but it really is. I mean, I hesitated at first to call it a bubble because there's a lot of people coming in and out of it for various reasons, but it really does. I mean, that's really the best way to talk about it, because we're in here. Things are not great around us in this country, you know, with the virus, but they've done a good job inside here of keeping everybody safe.
Have you caught anyone just, like, gazing out the window, just wishing and hoping to go do something normal, or just any kind of weird vibes like that?
I mean, there's it goes back and forth, because on one hand, it is a lot of fun to be in this atmosphere and be around so many different games. And, like, I can go visit 22 different teams, which is not something that's easy to do under normal circumstances. But you do get a little stir crazy because, you know, there's only so many places that you can go. And my two other reporters and I last weekend, we went on a boat ride. And it was still, like, in Disney, but it was just the most glorious. It felt like the biggest luxury ever, because we got to sort of drive around in a pontoon for an hour.
Yeah, that's living. A pontoon for an hour. That's life. But anyway, I think there's actually a lot of people that would be envious, because all eyes have been on the bubble for a lot of people in the sports world. And the teams you cover specifically, the Lakers and the Clippers, I'm sure you're right about both for the Times, have been the focal point of the whole season, I would say, out West. But I don't know what to make of the Lakers early into this resumption of play. I don't think they care that much, and I don't think they necessarily should. I think they should be amping up for the playoffs. They've locked down the first seed. Why should they care about the rest of these regular season games?
Well, the reason they should care is that they have not been playing basketball for 4 months, and they came in here and they had 3 weeks, really, to get themselves ready for the playoffs. And that's really what this is all about. It's about getting them ready for the playoffs. And, you know, LeBron James has talked about this a lot. He was ready in March. I mean, he had spent several months building himself up, building his conditioning up, building his body up to the point where he was ready for that playoff run. And then everything stopped for 4 months. And, you know, even though he has the ability to do a lot of things. He was not without a basketball hoop. He was not without a gym to go to. He was able to do all that, but it's still not the same thing as playing an NBA game. And so I think that's the biggest concern for the Lakers right now. It's, are they going to be ready? Are they just the lack of momentum that they seem to have right now? Is that going to be an actual problem? Because back in March, they felt like the momentum that they had was a very good thing for them.
You mentioned that the bubble is you know, very unique. Have you noticed it's kind of almost like a big social scene? And what I mean by that is, you know, in talking to players in the NHL bubble, guys are friends with guys who are on other teams. So you run into somebody, all of a sudden they're playing cards, they're kind of hanging out. Have you noticed that kind of interaction between teams and between players?
Yeah, that's definitely happening. I mean, these players, the thing about players and coaches is that during the season, they don't really get to see each other. Even if you go to the city where one of your best friends plays, for example, when LeBron James goes to Oklahoma City, he gets dinner with Chris Paul, if he can, if their schedule allows for it. It doesn't always allow for it. And then that's it. And then you leave town after one night. In this setting, they're able to spend real time together, and you're able to, you know, you don't really have anywhere else to go, so you're able to catch up with your friends' lives and really understand how things have been going for them. And I think that's a luxury that there's a back and forth with everything, because they do miss their other loved ones who aren't in the bubble, but they also, I think, are appreciating the opportunity to hang out together.
You mentioned LeBron and his training, and he was ready. He always seems to be ready. Do you sense any urgency from him that he's got to kind of make some hay here and maybe get one or two? Or how long do you think he can keep up? I know the physical conditioning, and he's a specimen. He spends $1 million on his body a year. But where do you think his headspace is at as far as urgency and the timeliness of getting another championship?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to him to win a championship this year. But one thing that he was saying yesterday is that he doesn't, you know, he was asked about, like, you know, with all your experience in championship situations, going into the playoffs, what can you tell the rest of your teammates about where you guys need to be? And he said, well, I don't have any experience with this. I don't have any experience playing basketball in a bubble in August. So I think there's just a major unknown factor here. I do think it's really important to him, and I do think he really wants to win a championship this year, but I also think he sort of recognizes that this is just a very unusual situation, and apparently, you know, one thing he said, I don't know exactly what he means here, but he said there are things going on off the court that he didn't want to talk about that are making it harder for players. So I don't know what exactly that is, but I do know that this is a very strange setting, and NBA players are creatures of habit. They really like their routines. They really like, you know, how they're used to things, and that's all different for them right now.
With Tanya Ganguly of the LA Times, I did not hear that quote from LeBron, and I think it would be right to assume he's talking about the setup maybe, or the build-up, or the preparation. But could he possibly be talking about what's going on in the world? And, you know, he has been at the forefront of talking about the social justice push. He was going at it with, well, I don't know about at it, but he was commenting on Trump earlier today or yesterday. Could that be something that's weighing on him, that he is the face of a league that has been at the forefront of, you know, progressive movements and social justice and speaking aloud about what's going on in society right now?
Well, I mean, I don't think that's what he was talking about in that particular comment, but I do think that that's been really important to him too here. He has taken time in most of his, I think in all of his press conferences, actually, he has taken at least some time to talk about different things in the realm of social issues. The first scrimmage that the Lakers had, he spoke after it, and he answered his first two questions by mentioning Breonna Taylor and then answering the question. Last night he was talking about a video he saw of a family in Colorado that was pulled over and their children were put face down on the ground. And it was apparently a mistaken situation where they were looking for somebody else, but this happened to this family. He spoke about that last night. He said he didn't want to get into it with Trump. He said that he said, I know what happens. I know where this can go for me, and I don't really want to get into it. But then he did get into it, kind of echoing what a few other people have said, which is that he doesn't care, and he doesn't think anyone else cares. Anyone else in the league cares if Trump is watching them or not.
Well, try to stay occupied down there. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you are. And we'll see where this takes as the regular season continues and the real stuff is still about a week and a half away. But really appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you, Tanya.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times down in the bubble down in Orlando.
Bubble life.
Bubble life in Orlando. Well, they've been down there for a while, and the two final teams are going to be down there for a lot longer, man. They're still in there for another 2 months.
I was talking to somebody in the bubble yesterday, and he was telling me there are some characters, especially that, you know, guys that aren't going to play, or, you know, maybe executives are kind of just, there's a couple just enjoying themselves.
Oh, yeah.
All I could think of was that NHL the guy that we always saw
with the stash in Buffalo.
Yeah, the guy.
Well, he's probably out there. He's probably somewhere.
I guarantee you he's either here in Toronto or in Edmonton. That guy. Guaranteed.
He's got his beer fridge is stocked, and every night is just a party with the boys.
Can you imagine how familiar would there be bartenders, I guess, in the hotel lobby?
Well, yes, there is. There is. Apparently some of these hotel lobby bars are –
Is there it on the guys. Arm? Is the NHL paying for it?
No.
Oh, guys, are you kidding me? NHL, if they offered up a free bar bill, I've been to the Cup Final once in Pittsburgh because Ray couldn't get into town, so I had to go to Pitt for a couple games. There was an open bar after game one in Pitt for all media. People were guzzling. That must have been a $185,000 bill. I've never seen anything like it. Somebody must have looked and saw the booze and said, no way, I'm cutting this off. Can't happen.
Yeah. Well, they do that every year at the draft.
Locked in a hotel, game over, man.
They set it up, but it's quick. I know the drafts we've been to, there's like a media, and it's like you have about 45 minutes, and they'll let the hooligans get after it, and then
dude, I remember that haze in Buffalo. Someone was trying to order like premium scotch or something, and he was like, screw it, put it on the bill. And I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah. Throw it on the NHL's
And you know,
plastic.
Like, there are floaters that just get in there.
That guy that was in Buffalo in the Hawaiian shirt and the mustache, he is just pile-drived in the hotel lobby bar right now.
Yeah. But my understanding is everyone gets, meal money and you have access to everything, you have to pay for it. They don't want anybody using actual money. So everything's either charged to your room or on your credit card. But if you're with your team, you have access to your room all the time. There's always food in there, food and drink in there, right? So breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If you want to, you know, I guess save your meal money and just eat there every day, which would probably be annoying by the end.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, did you not find it weird that like the money you make in the NHL, regardless of what it was, I thought it was incredible when I got on the plane. They're like, here's your meal money. I'm like, you're seriously paying me that and you're giving me money to go eat? I thought that was insane.
I liked it.
I never used it, but I couldn't believe that you actually got meal money making that. Like, imagine a guy that was making 10 sheets getting on the plane saying, here's money for food. I just couldn't get over it.
Back then when we started, you know, there was nobody making 10. Like, I agree. Nowadays, like, those guys don't certainly need it. I always enjoyed it, to be honest, because I enjoyed having the cash on the road. You know, you go and do something.
One's going to complain about free money.
But exactly. And then that pass the ace on the
money.
Bus.
You I know, never the guys, used 1 cent of it. Never.
Just guys use it for tipping people.
I give it to the trainers every time. I'm like, yeah. Go get a beer or something. Go do whatever.
There you go. Man of the people. Yeah. Right there. Man of the people. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up in about 20 minutes. Cannot confirm or deny that we may get to some confirm or deny. The Leafs are in action tonight, and they are using the Raptors room tonight. They're going to be in the Raptors dressing room. Auston Matthews just spotted walking into the building in a pair of the shortest shorts I think I've ever seen. And a Raptors jersey.
He's Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, he's
I love
got the
it.
Burt Reynolds, and he's got a Raptor jersey on, so he's supporting the team. I love it.
How
bet
short?
You those shorts are worth $2,500.
How short?
That we're talking 4 inches above the kneecap.
Come
tight?
On.
And quite
Grappler,
tight.
Send me the pic of the shorts.
Yeah, we'll get it. You'll see it. I saw someone placed a price tag on all of his clothing items that he was wearing for game one, and it was like outrageous. Because I don't get style. Like, I'm not in style. I'm wearing a black T-shirt and a pair of jeans, and I'm happy.
Dude, he buys a black T-shirt that costs $3,000.
That's what I'm saying. He had a pair of shorts on. He had a shirt on that looked like he picked it up off someone walking into the rink, and it was like $3,500.
Yeah, that Drew stuff, it just says, like, Drew on it, and people are like, oh, my God, did you see his hoodie? That's what Bieber wears. I'm like, you could Carlo's brother does that, and it cost you $80.
I know. He had a hat on that was 1,500. Anyway, Find it, look into it. We're tracking the PGA Championship. Rain about 20. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, Ray's coming up in about 15. Tracking the PGA Championship. The Canucks won this afternoon. They're up 2-1 in their series. Leafs in action tonight. Winnipeg, Calgary as well. Nate Pearson on the mound. Everything you're looking for in the sports world. All of a sudden, it's available to you. It was gone for a long time, but it's back. And it's a thing of beauty. I am thoroughly enjoying it.
It's kind of an awkward pause. I was just, I know, it was an was awkward like, pause. I didn't know if you were
I thought you
dialed
were,
in for
I wasn't
a,
sure. If you were
well, I was waiting for one of you to hop in, and it was
No,
just,
I apologize. I was, like, waiting. I thought you weren't finished. That's why. I was just
saying. Well, there wasn't really anything to finish. I was just kind of getting the ball rolling, anticipating someone to jump in. But
you showed me a pic of the big screen. What's going to get the big screen's attention when you walk off that set?
The Leaf game tonight, for sure. I'm watching the Leaf game at 8. Yeah. I am not sure what to expect, and I think that has been consistent for really years with this team when it comes to big games. I don't know what kind of effort we're going to see tonight. It starts with the big boys. It starts with Freddie. But at some point, I think they're going to need to get some input and some production.
Secondary,
from,
right?
Yeah, I think like that third line has been buzzing, but they got to tap one in. Yeah. Right? Like, they're going to have to chip in. That fourth line played more minutes in game two. And I thought they looked a little bit better. I think they have at least a possibility to chip in a little bit as well. That should be expected over time.
Yeah. D-man could score a goal. Right. Anything. Something different. It's
well,
just...
you think – I think Columbus is going to have a better effort, but that
big
doesn't
time.
Mean the Leafs can't change their effort. So, you know, it's going to be if I was a Leaf player, I would expect – a tougher game tonight. And what I mean by that is the Leafs were able to implement their game plan and didn't have much pushback last game from Columbus's players. They did from the goaltender, but not the players. Now you're going to have pushback tonight from Columbus. You have to find a way to fight through and still implement your game plan. So that'll be the challenge for the Leafs. Can they do it? Sure. But it's a lot of hard work, and it's going to be they're going to have to impose their will. And to your point, Brian, it can't just be 34-16 or Tavares.
Jamie, when it's a tight checking team, it's like, oh, okay. As soon as it's like they got shut out in the first game, it's like, oh, the big boys. Like it would just be so nice to have some support and Kasper Kapanen jump in with a couple goals.
Exactly.
Or Tyson Barrie with a couple goals. Talk about the big guys.
I agree. I think that their depth has to contribute, not just look good and change momentum. They actually have to contribute on the score sheet.
Yes, exactly. And especially if you have intentions of going on a long run. Look at last year, game 7, the best line was the fourth line for Boston, right? You get to big Corrally. Games, not every game your big boys are going to carry you. Sometimes the opposition will find a way to shut them down. That doesn't mean you're automatically losing, because if you are automatically losing, you're not good enough to go anywhere anyway.
Correct.
So it's got to be on the depth of the team, and we'll see where that takes us tonight. Ray will join us in about 10 minutes. Cannot confirm or deny that. We'll get to confirm or deny, and we'll revisit our text chain from earlier this morning.
Or
we'll reveal the third party. And one of the goofiest coaching mind tricks of all time. That I have to believe fell flat. We'll tell you about that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.